So, okay, so we temporarily stop. Before that I start, I have many questions. So, who wants that the speed go faster? This is just not for me if I can.
Yeah.
Or it was fine and it was not. Okay. Good. So then we have six notebooks to see at home. Okay. I didn't plan to make them anywhere, but there are more stuff that I may have to use. So I think that we have time to do the second one and the third one, maybe not until the end, but I hope to at least the second and probably part of the third. And then the rest is maybe wireless, so you can get the solution here. So we start with what's the basic type, dictionary, code, integer, and all those stuff. So now we will see whatever allow you the what they call the control flow that will manipulate those. We send follow, if, else, and see the syntax, because Python is a bit specific on those compared to other languages, so the most particular people from another language. So we start with the if else statement. And an important thing, if you come from MATLAB, it looks like it may be the same. I don't remember. Is it indented in MATLAB? No? Okay, so it's not the same. So this is particular. So in Python, what's important is always the indentation is very important. So it's how you organize your code. So you will have if statement, whatever is inside the block will be indented of 4 characters or 2 characters, that's really 4 characters. And when you go back, is that you get outside from the statement. Okay? So this is something which you have to get used. And to get used also how to read it. So first thing that we go through is the if else and if else statement, which are the following to make comparison and to go in one branch one over one. So how to do that? So we can declare 2 variables. So means A and B, which is equal to A 1 and 2. So yeah, you can imagine I never did it before, but you can inline declare several variables where one will be unpacked here and two will be unpacked inside the same variables. Sometimes that's saving some space over when you're in terminal. And now I would like to make some comparisons. So for example, try to catch if A equals to B and with an indent. I finish my statement with 2 points, so it means that that was my first if statement. I'm going back. And now I put an indent, and I will be able to put what I want inside my if to be executed when this is equal to true. Okay? So if A is equal to B, I want to print. Okay? And to make the case that actually this is useful, so we have A which is smaller than B. Okay? So I could make a if statement. If A is inferior to B, please. A inferior to B. And then lowercase, whatever. Then when we execute this, my A and B were there, so what I went through this branch, I did this, okay? So you can have the if, the elif, and the else, and then put it in, okay? I don't think that there is any branch. It's looking like in our language, the only thing that is maybe a bit more tricky is how it looks like to do that, okay? So if you forget, because it's always good to know, I think, if you forget the 2 points, you will have a syntax error. Okay, so if we tell you something about that, that's good. What else can happen? Yeah. So let's say that I want to be a boy to execute. So if A is inferior to B, shouldn't work because I have a different intent. It will tell me that this, okay, indentation error and unexpected indent is finding that here I have a space more than the line before. I don't know what to do and to which, where is it belonging to, and it's sending it. So I think mainly it's a two error that you can get when you mess up, when you write it, okay? And that you, when you saw those, you can think about indent is just an alignment, syntax is because you forgot a certain point or something. And sometimes when you get the errors, don't only check the line that you have, but also the line before, okay? Sometimes this is like you forgot a comma in the line before and it's telling you, hey, this line is wrong, but actually the one before that you forgot something. So that's what debugging is. So here, in the notebook, it was a different example where we changed the value of A and B to see that we execute different parts of the trees, but I mean, that's obvious. So now I have an exercise. So we saw already with list. So for instance, that's the empty list. And now the exercise using a if, trying to get that a list is empty or not empty. So for instance, if A is equal to that, I would like to write something, if, something with A, and print this is empty. Or if not A, to say that's not that if the, that we can be true, I will return false, okay? And try to print something and check which statement will allow you to check actually that the list is empty or not. You can try a couple of things and see what you can come with. Which language do you use today? Okay, how you would do it in Russian? Do you have a point size or size? Okay, so I think in MATLAB you would do something which typically you would do that. Is equal equal 0? Maybe I. Okay, so if it's equal equal to 0, then see I think there's something or not. Okay, so I could write that. Okay, I have an empty list. I can check the size because we saw that it was a container. I can check how many elements I have. If, by instance, I check length of A is not zero. I mean, it's zero. So equal equal zero will tell me the thing is empty. That's the way that you wrote. Write it in MATLAB, in C++, right? Is not the way that you write it usually in Python. It's not the way in Python as well. Because the way that you would write it, an empty list, will actually, when you put it in the if here, if A, it will return you false. Because empty is like nothing inside, so it will be false. So if I do if A, if not A, sorry. So if A will be true, it will be false. So if I want to trigger this statement, I need to invert the true to false. So just because maybe I didn't present before. So if I have not true, it's false. Okay? That's kind of obvious. But so if I take, if I expect that if A is false, I can use if not A, print something, and this will work. Okay? So if A is actually an empty list, it will execute this statement. So if I have an empty list, we will about to write the equal equal 0 and the length. The only thing that we'll try to do is just take the if not A, and you will know. So, I mean, in entries is how we are checking. Okay? So, this is a kind of if you read a lot of code, in the minute people write Python, usually, if you see this, you will be more usually see this than to see the equal equal zero. So, if you are just to show you the differences between when you come from Matlab that you do something, in Python you write it in that way, and you will just do that.
Is it just a matter of style or just something?
It's a matter of style. Okay. Because I learned that doing the same, I don't know underneath. I don't know at the low level if the operation are the same. Okay. But usually, that's Python anyway. Okay?
Also
means
that they don't have a definition for exactly,
so they don't have a zero. No. So you can say it's nothing different, nothing. Because it has to be not A. Nothing. I mean, the only thing here is that you check that A is empty. So it's a list and it's empty. So usually when you write that, it's because you know that A is the list. Okay, I mean, if I write it in that way, the context tells me that I want to check that the list is empty or not. Okay, the word context, I know this is the list, and the way to write that if this is empty, and that I want to do something with append values, I will do it in that way. So then, in a similar manners, let's try to write it in a Pythonic way that if I have A is equal to zero, how do you write the each statement so that I can execute it? You would write it if A is equal to zero, or would you write it again if not? We need more. Yeah. So if I do that, and let's check E is not K. So it's zero. So it will work the same way. Okay, so I could have write if A is equal to zero, but usually it's the same. You will not see it. People will try to write it that way. So now I will take the structure and summarize what they want, which is you have some stuff that trigger false. Okay? And you have a couple of objects that are doing this, which is an empty list. So I will press the list of the things that are doing this. So zero, false, and number one, which is no. Okay, so just one is, for example, if I in X, so I anticipate of the follows, but what I try to do here is to take a follow on each element, and I will execute this statement just to show you that actually you trigger that. Okay, for Y in X, if Y not. If not while, print the same as false. Okay, so for the four elements that were in the same list, that were those one, if not while will always be executed. So when you say if not while, think about what why is, because it could be one of those. Okay? So it's something to know. I mean, if you read some code, don't take a shortcut thinking that it's just only equal to zero, because it could be none, it could be false, it could be an empty. So be careful about the context. So it's something that to be aware of. So it's what I just explained here. So let's start with the follow now. I just gave an example briefly of how follow is doing, but I will give like more intuitive. I mean, since that this was list, we can check that. So let's copy paste this first sentence here. So the syntax is a similar way, but that we have for the index, for instance, of the variable where we want to compact some values. And then we have the in, which is a missing well the container. It will pick up the content of this list and pass it to the I and look over all the elements. Okay, that's this statement, 2 points, and in that, and then you can do something. So instead, if I use this piece, it's printing the value 1, 2, 3, 4, because it will iterate over my list and take each element. So now I have a data size, and you can write inside the command line, help branch, it will give you a dot string, and for the one that comes from MATLAB, it will be like in space. And the range tells you some information, is the same line as the slice actually, where you can give some numbers. And my idea is to try to reproduce this thing here, but using, instead of using a list, try to use the range function. Okay? So you have the help here, and you can try to write the first segment, and instead to write the list, you write the list, generate the list with range. Okay? And then you can print. So you can print the four first element to actually do like the proper examples, like this one. Okay?
So what if you have a history in this list?
So for my list here, so that I pick up every element. If I have a string, what is your guess? What you would guess? So it's a container. Each number is in the place inside my chain of array. For the string, I said that actually my array is a character in each pair. So if I have a string, I will print each time one character because I will iterate over each of the letters. Because what I'm storing is in each cell. Does that make sense? That
one. Well, it may not numbers in the list in the hamsters. I don't know. I mean, 1, 2, 8, 3.
Ah, it will work in.
Okay.
Right. So if I have this,
yeah, does it work the same?
Oops. So it will work exactly the same way because it will iterate. That's an element. That's a second element. That's a third element. So it will print. Okay. 1, 2, 8, 4. So more interesting thing. What do you expect? That is printing 1, 2, A on each line? Or do you expect it to do 1, 2, the full A?
Yeah,
okay, because this is a container.
Yeah.
So it will print my full container. So if I do that. Okay, so you print all this. And because the string are a bit more complicated, maybe some way it seems not like weird. Yeah, I can put something else. And here it's more obvious, I mean that's a container, so that's a list. So when I go to that, it's unpacking the full list and print the full list. So with the string it's the same. It's not printing it for any reason because it knows the full thing. Okay. So going back to the range, I don't think this is more difficult than the size. Okay, so what we could do is for I in range. The doc was saying that you can put either stop or the beginning, the stop and the step. So let's start by the stop. I would like to go until 4. But for an infinite, so we need 5. And then I can print I. And creating values and we can iterate over. And the same way you can do fancy stuff like 0 until 10 and I want two values. Okay, and it will go by step of. So the range function is really useful for that. One that you pass to NumPy, you will have other functions which are better ready to work with NumPy again. So we saw before a container. So now my question is just, how would you do it? So you remember we had something that was saying, I don't remember, something like runs equal, and we have three values inside. February, March. Okay. How would you iterate on that? The same way than before? Right? Why is it different? It seems that it's working for a string, it seems that it's working for a list. So why not for both of us? Okay. So we can try. So I will make put an S or maybe it's ES, I don't know what it is. Okay. For months in once, so it's very obvious for the Python, and very confusing. You can bring every value that you went back. That's one. So it means that any container, you have always the same way of looping over. Okay. So you can use in, you don't have to, like, usually what you do in MATLAB or in C is to create an array with the index, and then you will go and pick up the elements related to the index. Okay. I mean, that's usually the common way. So in Python, you can already, when you have an array, you can already unpack the values directly and go inside that list and inside that tuple and get directly the value without indexing. Okay. So sometimes it is on that soldering to not have multiple, the writing is easier to read. Then if really you need an index, you have a function which is called enumerate. So you can need it for some reason. And somehow it's telling the following is an iterator for index. So when you create, when you want to look over the months, for instance, in the tuple, what you would be interesting is also to know what are the corresponding index where you are. Because I mean maybe you want to do something in another thing and you want to assign. So I don't want only to know which element, but also the index. So to do that, you can use the function enumerate. So one would be the index, the other one would be the months. And I can use enumerate over the months. So you will return me two variables. That was my topper. So that's each element of my topper. And enumerate will unpack an index. Okay? So, if I print IDX, let's make it in one line. The index of once. Is that explaining format or not? Very much. Okay. Format is a nice way of creating a string, and instead to here I will replace what I put inside with the value of the variable. So to see, I will put index and months, and what will happen is that the value for my iteration here, index, will be put at the first one, and this one will be put at the second one. So if you want, for instance, for any reasons is not the good order, you can also specify the order that you want. So here I want my second variable, the one at index 1, and here I want the first variable, the one at index 0. So you can reverse, but try to make it in order sometimes is better. And now I have things which are on the same line. So I have my index of my forms is the same time than my months. Okay. The only problem is that zero is not the month of January. Okay, so that's not super useful. What we would like is not to, we could write index plus one, but we are better than that. So what we can use is the zip function. So that is it. It's working a bit the same way, I mean, the syntax is the same way than the enumerate. So what's actually happening, we'll call zip, and then we'll give iterators, come back to containers, I mean, this is what we call containers, okay? So you could have a list here and a second list, and then if you read the doc, what zip will do is to try to take an element of each every time and give it to the and use it. So if I have two lists with three elements, I will take the two first elements, the two second elements, the two third elements. Okay? So now there is a sense, now that it's very important, is to write a form using zip, unpacking two lists, one or two components, whatever iterable it is, where in the first iterable I will have the months, and the second one I will have the numeric, I mean the numeric one, so one, two, three. Okay? So you create two things, and then you unpack or you zip them, and then you can print the statement, this month is index one. Okay? You have something which is not clear in whatever I say, because I'm giving you the head now, you have to read somehow, so it's a bit tricky. If you are right, you just go to the details. Before that, I give the solution of which is not fun. So remember that for enumerate, we call a function and we give an iterable here. So here what we tell you is to give two iterables and then we will unpack into variables. Okay. So the way that you do that, so first let's create, I already did these variables, then I can create this one, which let's put this tree. Okay. I can call this index and the month. And now I will use my zip and give my two iterable. Okay. So the first one will be month index and the one will be months. In the results. Okay. So that's good. It means that I can give two lists or two iterables. Okay, so two lists, two tuples, one list, one tuple, a string, whatever. And then I can unpack with it and put, I mean, start to make things with them. Okay, so now I say that I took the first element of the first thing with generate, I can just say that it's corresponding. Okay. Okay. What if I have a list which is longer than the other one? What do you think that Python will do? Is it reading you an error? Is it overlap? I mean, is it going on the longest one? Is it going on the smallest one? What do you predict? What makes sense for you? Smallest one. Yeah, that seems to be true. So I think that was the next question. No, that was yeah. So for instance, I have that. I have two tuple, and I have more in months string than in the months indices. Okay, so I will zip. I try to see what I'm printing. And if you check, I only three values. So it means that it took the three first value in command, and it just discarded the end of it. Okay? So be careful when you zip things that you think that you do something, but actually you didn't finish the job. So be aware that that's one of the behavior that can happen. So always read the document. Then just for information, you have another thing which is interesting in the standard library, which is iterables, and can allow you to, the same as if you can make some operations. So for instance, one is produce. It's just one example, but if you want to check more, you can check the help of iterables. I didn't see the working thing that way. Pray you better to go on the internet and check the full list. Okay. But the idea is that you have function, so instance, the product one, which allow you to try so please we can try from before. And the products allow you to take my first list, take my second list, take the first element and try with all the elements of the second one, take the second element and try with all the elements of the second one, so it makes the product of the two lists. Okay? So sometimes you are interested in what is more complex iterators or iteration way of combining two lists or more lists. So if you need any of those, you can go and check if this is available in iterables. Because the iterables will allow you to, inside the for loop, to make those kind of operations which are a bit more complex. Okay? So that's just to move what to look at. So the for loop allows you to look over some stuff. Otherwise, we have also, like in any other language, we have the while. Okay? So that's something that's very you probably also use in other languages. The statement is the one. You check that the variable is bigger, smaller, or you make like a statement of comparisons, and then you make an operations which is intended. Okay? So in that case, we iterate over n until that the n is smaller than 10. After that, we break our loop. If we want infinite loop for some reasons, so never do that, huh? It's just to illustrate the break statement. But this thing is doing exactly the same than before. So you should do it as before, not like this one. But I want to show that you can actually use a break at any point. I mean, you have, for instance, you have an optimization function and you want to stop the iteration at some point for because you have some compliance with the iteration number or something like that. You can make a check with your if and say you make a break. When this is true, it will break your while. But in that case, I have like a while, infinite while, because while true will just infinitely loop. And I can break it at that time. Okay? So if you check, that's working. Okay, it's working, it's breaking, then you need to. Then this, so we have while, we have break, and then these two other things, which is called continue and pass, is just to answer to illustrate. What is your guess about continue? What will happen if I include this thing there? I mean, it's maybe confusing what continue will do and what pass will do. What would be the difference? Do you have any idea? So here I just say that if I have a new, if it's an odd or even number, okay, so it's. So what would happen in that case? Do you have any clue? No? So continue, we just not execute what is afterwards. Okay, he will come here, and he will come back to the next iterations. Pass is just something that lets pass. Okay. So if you check here, I have only this statement. So here the else pass is useless, but it's just to illustrate that you can sometimes use pass in some way, and the pass is just letting pass continue. It's just skipping the current iterations. Okay?
Do you need pass?
No, no, it's what I say, you don't need pass. Here is just to illustrate that in some case, if you see pass is just to let pass thing. I mean, it's to know that the difference between continue and pass. I mean, you could expect that to continue, I don't know, for some reason, it's just continue the code. Okay? But that's not the case. There's a code and this is pass. But here, in that case, what you could write, if you want to do that.
I mean, did I understand right that continue moves to the next iteration?
Yeah.
And pass lets continue with the.
Yeah, exactly.
So pass is essentially no op, it does nothing yeah. at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just because there has to be something in the loop.
There has to be something in the code block,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you say if something, if some condition colon, then there has to be an indented block below that. And if you are not actually doing anything there, then you can just say pass. I'm not doing anything. And it's sometimes actually used as a form of documentation. So you can say if this condition applies, then actually do nothing. So you say pass. Else, do something else, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just for as a marker saying I've seen this case and I explicitly say do nothing.
So specifically in this case, what I would have write pretty only this because the else pass is pretty useless. Okay, so that would be the same results.
So pass is definitely extremely rarely used.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's more in object-oriented, and somewhere you don't want to implement a function, but you don't want the thing to break in some way, and you say, okay, you would like to implement that, but for the moment we don't raise an error, so you pass this function, because it does nothing, but I want that it doesn't break the code of people. Okay, so you could have like empty function, that just pass, and for them, it doesn't break. That's the type of thing that sometimes happens. So then next, we saw the list, we saw a follow. So sometimes there is something nice in Python that you can do is to create a list in one line. So it's called list comprehensions. So let's first take this example, this code example, which is I have an empty list, okay? And now we saw that we can loop over range, so we look from 0 until 9, and then I can append each value inside A. So if I execute this, it's not working.
It works in IPython, but in Python, you have to
sort it because
you have to keep the loop together and the A is separate.
So, yeah, A is equal to that. So for I okay. And now I have a list where I put those things. So it took somehow 3 lines of code to create a list with numbers. And a nice way of doing it is to compact it. So you could write in this way, and this way is known as list comprehensions. So you can usually, I mean, it's distinct, the syntax is distinct because you have the square brackets of the list, okay? And inside, you will have the way that you create it here. So how you read it is that I want to put an element I in this list, and the element I correspond to each element for I in range of 10. Okay? So in one line, I can create the same things. And you will encounter much more lists in Python than the other one where you create an empty list and just add the element inside. Okay? So now we saw that we can do that for a range of value, but we can even go further because, so in some way, when you read this, it's like if you read English, okay? And if I want to imagine, I want to make a column in which, compared to before, I want to take only the odd numbers for the event in every range. So I can do this, then I can do my form. Then I can make a check that the module is 1, 0 in this 1, I want to continue, so skip it. Otherwise, I want to A dot append the value of I. And if I do that, I have to go to 0.68. Okay, so now I did 2 lines more. With the list comparison, you can also include this when you create a list. So if I go back here, I could say I want each I for I in range of this, but only if I is equal to respect this list here. Okay? So I do that. Write something in this way. So I will put only I when this is not true. So if not I modulo 2. Okay, it's true. And this is what I expect, that it will create the same list in one line. So we can add statement in that way. And if you check, that's doing exactly the same things, but in a compact manner. Okay? And in when you are used to it, it looks like English speaking plain things. So yeah.
Is it a matter of personal preference or is it a sort of a Python style to do it in one line because it becomes less readable like?
It's a Pythonic way. You can read a bit about these compilations. I mean, the first one that I read apparently is the guy that invented Python that said that was nicer than using some functions. So, in somewhere, it's avoiding sometimes to apply like math to reduce filter function at 2 in the middle. And when you're used to it, it's much easier to read. But it's good that you need to be used to it. And also, you shouldn't. Because you can go into infinity and put a lot of stuff. So I don't know if it's maybe my own rules, but if a list comprehension takes more than 3 lines, that way you shouldn't make a list comprehension. Because this too long or bad. That's my personal opinion.
So generally speaking, the append way, so the loop with this append up there is very uncommon. So you would almost never write this in Python unless the loop is actually more complex than what we have there. Something like this would always be spelled as a discomprehension. And even if the discomprehension is a bit more complex, you can make it more readable again by splitting it over multiple lines. So you don't have to write everything in one line. Even that one that we have here with the for and the if, sometimes you would say a equals list of I, then next line, for I in range 10, next line, if not.
Yes, so you can break this line, put this statement on the right, and then put the other statement on the board. So it's over 3 lines, and you see that the first one will make an iteration, and the second one will make a comparison to know what it is. So when you're used to it, you spot it much easier than doing it here in some way. Okay? But again, I mean, this is probably something that you get used over time, and what you see a lot in India, that seems more natural. But it's not something that you have to know about language, but just know, maybe that seems more.
By the way, combination of conditions.
How many?
I am different from 3, for instance.
Yeah.
Do we want the same list plus another condition?
So if not in the rat and I different. Okay. and two is not inside. So you can add that. And then your if statement is like if you were writing your own if inside up there. So it's belonging inside, so you can have the logic there. Okay, that will be correct.
One general remark regarding readability. So for these comprehensions, the way you split them, if you keep them on one line or you split them across multiple lines, always depends on the complexity of the whole thing and where the complexity actually is in the statement. So sometimes the items that you collect in the list have a very complex expression. In that case, they would probably merit their own line and you would have the four in the next line. Okay? So if you're not collecting ice, but I choose something, function calls something, so very complex expression here, then that would be its own line, and the next line would say for I in range 10.
Okay, here's a statement. I mean, this one is really, we take only like, but the like, you calls many different things.
Yeah.
Okay, you get it.
So
the splitting is kind of, I think, when you get used and that people tell you why to use like setting that, which I'm still not doing that method, but is by seeing how people does that and some way that starts to be more readable. So now we just did the list. And how you would do that, so you remember that you have the dictionary, and the dictionary was something that I somehow a key and a value, and that you were given using. So key one, value one, key two, value two. So we saw that the list, you can put square brackets and numbers inside and after create the list. And for the dictionary, we're doing it in that way. There's a way of creating a dictionary in the same way. Either I give you this as an exercise and I put it here. Maybe try during 2 or 3 minutes. What you would write, try to do the same similar thing than here and try to create a dictionary. For instance, with a month, so you have a list with the months as a string, the months as an index. And then you want to write, we saw that we can write the form with I, with a Z.
Okay.
So we can have this, and then you will try to create a dictionary in that way. So just here, you saw that this is a square bracket, the dictionary is a really curly bracket, and the only thing that changes between the set and the dictionary is that you have a key and a value. So you can find it in 2 minutes, try to make a dictionary comprehension, to create a dictionary on the way. Okay. So don't even that you can start with just a dictionary with this as a keys and this as a value. Then you try to find that, doing a one-line comprehension dictionary, and try to see how you would do that. Thank you. So would that errors when they try to take something? I mean, there is, when you stand there, when you search, but yet, so would that the solution maybe? No? Nobody? We try. So the syntax as for the list, we start with the syntax which is kind of dictionary wise, okay? So we know that we somehow we should have the curly brackets. Then what we know also is that here to get each element, what would make sense is to use a zip to get every element. So what we can put it, we will add at some point zip months string. Month index. Okay, so we know that, and we look, want to look over that. Okay, so for s, or I will call it in string because we are working with dictionary somehow, for the key, because I want the string to be the key, and for the index, in, zip, whatsoever. So when I will do that, I will look over and take a time two elements, and pack them in the key in dictionary. And we saw before here that you really created the key and the value. So somehow, when that one that you know the solution somehow, that makes sense for you to try to put the key. And I call it index, but that work key. Okay, key and value. And in some way, when that you know, it seems natural, but the first time I have to do it. So, and in that way, he's taking two values and creating the dictionary in that way. Okay. So, the same way that you create the list, you have a way to create the sets, you have a way to create the dictionary. Each of them have maybe a slightly that depend on the implementations. But you can do it in that way. Okay. Does it look okay? Or do you have any question about the last few for instance? So you can also do for a set, but seeing that this is the same than for the list, no need, I will pass. So I mean, I will just do it for you. So the same way, what is tricky is that the set and the dictionary start also with curly brackets, okay? So what makes the difference is that here we have a key and we have a value, the set will just have the values inside. So if I do that, and that I check the time, that's a set, okay? If I would have a key and a value, it would be a dictionary. So the only thing that matters is the key values, so we work with it.
So it's
okay, that's about sorting, dictionary. So usually dictionary, when you print them, this shouldn't be ordered. So if I don't have an order, I use IPython. Are you using IPython or Python? Please explain. So, I mean, the only thing that under the hood, in Python's API, dictionary will not, I mean, the key will not see this in the order. It means that when you keep keys, it should look like what I had here. It will be generally very much, and you will create, and it doesn't have, when you print them, it doesn't have to be activated order. And when you use IPython, by default, you must be like to have it in order way. When you print it, so here I have an IPython things. When you print it, it reorders the key and it looks different. If I'm not wrong, in Python 3.6, now the features are ordered by default and you can rely on it. Because since that Python doesn't do it, it means that the process actually has the dictionary shouldn't are not ordered. It's like the same, they are not ordered. Okay. So if you check the definition, it is standard. So for the set, the way to create a set is this one. So actually you can do the same way than for the
overs
in
range,
and then you can do the same thing. Okay, that is, we create set of branches with numbers inside, in some way. Usually, we want maybe to repeat or want to create a set of already known things, but in general, we set to, I know, maybe you need to create a set with a lot of numbers, and we want to use branches, whatever you can make it like that. It's the list, so it's much less than the list of branches, the most known is the list of branches. Okay. So that's all for this one. So in the last half an hour, we can go in definitions and functions. Okay. So let's do this. So up to now, anybody have a question about whatever we saw in the second part here, or it seems to be over here, or this let them run. Oh, it's fine. Okay. So the first notebook is about creating the functions, returning values, and we all did that in Python. So here is again to show what are the specificities in Python. So to create a function, you just have to use that. The name of the functions, the parameters that you want to assign, then an index. Okay, you have to index a few things like for the form, say that this is the body of my function, and then you can start doing things. Okay, so here I would like things x. Okay, so this, what I just did is that I just created a function which is doing this. So now I can call it. Okay, so if I do and write something, it will print it. Okay. That's great. The thing that actually what we do with function is that we do some processing, and then what you see and do is give it back to actually another process. Okay. So what you would like is, for instance, make use a return statement. So in this case, define, make a double, my class x. And what I'm interesting is to double for some way. So it depends which type of thing you put inside. Let's see, we make a return double. So now, for that size, what I do is find the make numbers, you can make make numbers, and here you just pass an integer, and then just pass your string. Okay, and you see that it's actually moving two different things because it depends on the time. So, it tells you also that this is important for it to write your limitations. Because you can expect something as input, seeing that Python is not time dependent, if you need what, maybe it can work whatever you need, but it's not what you expect. So I would interested maybe now. Usually what we do when you make this is that you document also what you want. And to make documentations, you write documentations using three of those, and then you will start to write a small description of what you need to make. So, for instance, then you can have long descriptions. So it's not a standard, I mean, it's a standard that is non-binary. So it is that you can compress things, which is very short, to say what the function will do, okay? Second, that page is more space than only one line explanation, so you can make long descriptions here that take several lines, okay? And then usually what you do is that you will explain what are the input parameters of your function. So in that case, my function was x, and I will mention the type which I expect. So I expect you int. But you see, it's only documentation, so it doesn't mean that you cannot pass a string. But I just tell you, I mean, this is working the way. So usually you say that, and then you put the descriptions of x. And also, what is common is that you say what the function is returning. So, for instance, in that case, the double, which will be an int, of course, and double is okay in some way.
So double is might not be appropriate.
Yeah, it's very important. So yeah, don't use double because double is also the float type and it's a special solution and use those things. But I'm doing fast. So use proper words. Not like me. And then to finish the next thing, what you do is that you finish by this three things. So I have three at the beginning, three at the end, and this is considered if you have a nice editor and not a Python console. It will be nicely rendered like the documentations in green or in other colors, or that you know that that's the documentations. And I will show you after that why it is useful. Ah! Okay. Wait. So let me just put it here. So it's another function, what I usually say. Okay, a short line, a more detailed ones, the parameters, the return statement, and then what my function is actually doing. Okay, and the nice thing of it is that if you do now, my function here was called Frank. So if I do and of Frank, whatever I wrote there is what is printing when you type end. Okay, so it means that somehow your function was also an object where you have a doc attributes which store this thing. Okay? So whenever you put some documentations, this is stored with the functions. So whenever you need it, you will be aware. I mean, people can write documentation because people can check from the Python command line, whatever, what are the doc. Okay? And then when you make project, you know that docs are important. So that's how you make documentation. So I plan at the end, but I think that is important. I'm going to mention it now.
It might be worth mentioning that there are different ways to spell out the parameters, for example.
Yeah.
So there are different formats how you,
yeah,
you know, how you write it in your docs.
Here I said that I was using NumPy way, but you can check. Yeah, the Google way of doing it, which I know only NumPy. That's why I use this one. But then you have different way of how you will organize the parameters. So what will be that? Now it's like the name of the parameters, 2 points, the type. And some of it is like you put, I think, something like you say, parameter, and then you spell the parameters, and that's the Google one, or the Python one. And you have different way of doing the docs. Because then when you make automatic documentations, the one that interprets those, you need the module that interprets this to make automatic documentations. That's why you have different types. So the important thing is that you are in, when you program with people, you should be all the same way, okay, and use the same things. I prefer like them by that because I find it readable, but it's just personal. I wouldn't trust people to do it. Okay, so we saw that when we do these things, that makes a double. And we saw that actually you can not think it against you, so you can put an integer, but it will work also for a string.
Or sometimes.
Sometimes. And nothing is forbidding me to do it, okay? So that is important. Okay.
I want to change an existing function, how can I go back to it in iPython?
In iPython? Arrow.
Yeah, but then I always get one line. How can I get into the function?
Not in IPython. If you go up, now I have a block. So if you're in IPython, you can modify. If you're inside the Python console, so for instance, so here I put in IPython. If I'm inside the Python, I have only one line. Mm-hmm. Or why maybe the old version of IPython that I didn't understand why it's like that. But that's why you should always use IPython, not this means. But because you have more tools. But usually you run inside an editor, so you don't have the notation. So now what I want is that try to call meltdumpers without anything inside. So let's call the function. Okay, so like that. And of course, when you try to execute these things, it tells you, okay, you miss parameters, and more will tell you which one. It's called X. So this is pity, because maybe we wanted to know by default that we wanted the double of some numbers. So it's what is called parameter with default values. And somewhere I could define my function such that X will be by default 10. Okay, like this. When you tell me, you don't tell me what it should be, it will be this number. So return X 2. If I call it, it will give me 20. Okay, that's cool. So like this, you can have some different parameters. So now I have a puzzle. So what I will ask you to do is to create a big X value, put an integer inside, then you will define a function, okay, which take X is equal to big X as argument, make something with it, so take the double for instance, and then you will try to do it again, say that big X is equal to another number, and try to call this function with the default parameters. I'm trying to understand what's the code child that case is. I mean, if you try to do those steps, what do you obtain at the end? Affect big X. Now I want to create a function with default parameters. So let's go for that one. And X will be equal to big X. So by default, I expect that it will be 10. Okay? And then I will return make that one. That's how to do it. X times 3. Okay, so now if I make double, what nothing is returning 20, which is okay, that's normal. So maybe what I want is to now change the default parameters, and I want that this is 100. Okay, so like this one, I will make doubles, I expect that it will be 100. Okay. The problem is that this is still 20, because when you make your stack, the first thing that you call, you define the function with this big X and you use the big X that you just did before. But if you want that this is updated, you need to recall these functions. Because otherwise, you just updated these variables. I mean, you put a new thing inside, but you didn't recall the functions. So that's not true. Okay. So you have to be careful in which order these things are. Okay. So if you need, here you will need to redefine this. And in that case, it works. Okay. So there's something to be careful what you are doing. The second process It's the number one.
Question.
Yep.
Sorry. If I delete big X in the meantime, will it run?
I don't think so. Because you already somehow you start the same before. So now you do an operation of big X, but you didn't introducing the previous states when you have your function. So now if I rerun my function with big X, then at the time that I will delete them, they're error. So I can still redefine it in that way. And now that's where the error is going.
Okay. So let's say big X is not an integer but a huge data bank. It will be stored somewhere in my RAM then.
Yes. So you can think of default arguments as kind of assignment at the time where you define the function.
Yeah.
The property defines the default argument is assigned at that point and is kept together with the function itself.
So there's no way of deleting that. So if I want to keep that function, I want to get rid of whatever I put there as default. I can't do that.
But because you don't want to pass the default in that case.
Yes.
Okay, default is none, and then at the first time I call you, I pass you this, or I have it loaded somewhere. But if you don't want, what if you put it as default, it means that you will usually delete, or that's the usual thing that you need.
I mean, normally the default arguments are not something like big data frame here. The most common default argument is actually none. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you will see why this is important in the second culture, which is this one. So the second one is we saw that you can have mutable and immutable parameters. Okay. So one of the culture is that if you pass as a default something which is mutable, stuff can happen. So for instance, let's create a function which take a dictionary. So add inputs. So as the default value, I want just to have A and to have B. Okay, so that's my argument.
Nee, bei der 2 vorne. Sorry, for the 2, there's a quote at the end. Quote for the 2.
Almost at the end of the line, yeah.
Okay, thanks. And now what I would like is... Let's say that...
You probably wanted to use 2 as an integer and not 2 as a string, so both should be integers.
Right. So now what we do is I first want to say and this one and then we want to return part. Okay? So the weird thing now is that if I call this function with no argument, what I expect is that when I call I will get A is equal to 2, B is equal to 3. Okay, because I want by default that my default is dictionary and then I will just add value inside. Okay, that's great, you think that is working. The problem is that if I increase it to the end, it's still increasing the values. Okay? Because since that my dictionary is mutable, every time the thing that I have admin has been changed in text and I just keep going and increasing things. So as an argument, you should never pass the default parameters the operators, which is meterbots, because you will change it inside afterwards if you use meterbots. So one way of doing is actually to use none. I know if it's well, but and then you can check that if ERS is null, and then you can return the value that you want. Like this, in my case, every time that I will check, so first not mutable, but I will check here, if it's not, then I will return this one. And this one will never change, because every time I will just return these things. Okay, so if you check afterwards. So one way to control the defaults, if you want to leave a default argument, is to add it inside your function itself.
And that's actually the more, can you just, yeah, that's, no, sorry, can you go back to the example, yes. No, that one, yes, right there, that function. That's actually the more common way to do it, because what you see is, so the difference is you had a return some value there, and what you're doing there is, you say, if I actually received the default argument, meaning if I did not receive args from my caller, then I use this value there, this dictionary there, as my args value, so you assign it to args and then you continue.
And then you continue, and your function will only, I mean, there I just return something that doubled my dictionary, but usually what you get is that you fix your argument and then the call of your function, so for instance here, this is what made double. So the call of the function is always the same and is always executed. The only thing that you do is that you assign a default argument inside the functions if it's not. So I think the shortcut before, but the proper way is usually more in this. Okay. So you check.
But it's a very common pattern, actually.
Yeah.
That's what you'll see a lot.
What kind of args can I pass to this function now? How does the function know what arguments I can pass to it?
I mean, it depends on the documentation of what the function is doing. So you can pass anything. But here we say add to dict, so somehow you should pass a dict because we add something to the dictionary. So it's quite good. But if you want, when it's not, it's said in the documentations what you should pass and what would be the default. So I know if I have internet. I don't have internet. So, but if you use machine learning recycling term, so you will see that some parameters and some objects, when you pass an object that are not mutable, you pass no, and you say no. But if you check the documentation, you say, okay, the default will be this type of classifier, and it will be created inside the functions, and it will use this. But if you check the string, the argument is equal to none, because the classifier itself is a mutable object. So you will see this pattern there for sure. If you go inside turn and the documentation is, from what I know, this is how it's done. So then multiple parameters. So we saw now that you can add parameters which have a base, which you absolutely have to give the values, and some that you already have the default values. And why is it useful is because, for instance, we can get this function here. So maths, I import the square roots, and I can define a function which will take x, y, z, and let's say this is I want to compute the distance between the points, and what I have here is the y of the point A, the of the first point, and this is the y of the second point, and this is the point 1 and point 2, okay, and this is the x and y is the empty. So, and the idea is that I want to compute the the distance. So the distance can be that way, where you take the first part of the tuples minus the second part of the tuple, it's the rest. So let's take this. Because Z has a different parameter here, I don't have to specify it, it will be replaced by 0, 0, 1. Okay? And I will have only X and Y. But maybe you are interested to actually call X, you know the value, and Z, and you don't want to specify this one. So a way that you can do that is, I mean, one way is put 0, 0. Or another way is also to, by name, you can specify the name of the variables and then the value. So like this, you have to let Z will be part of this one, X will be part of this one, and Y, because Y was at some default, it will be replaced by Y. But at least you know that I put two things here, but this one will not go inside the Y, it will go in Z, because I specified.
Even if you pass the three of them, I would personally write X equal to this, Y equal to that, Z equal to the other thing. So like this, it gets documented on the same call.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So having the name of the keyword, this is usually good. A part of, if there's some function that you know that anyway you need to pass, but at least it tells you what argument you are passing. And this is more clear as a 20 read.
An extreme case is where you pass a flag variable. So you pass your call function and you pass true. Right? That's entirely unclear what this true is doing. Right?
Yes.
And then what I always do is I write argument name equals true so that you can see what option is being passed in there.
And what does it mean? And without going to the doc, you probably have already a first look of what this thing is doing. So I'm removing uncertainty. Then, so we saw that we can have several arguments with face and several arguments without. I mean, while we have the keyword. And in Python, you have something which you can pack all the arguments which are positionals by these things, star args, and all the arguments which we put later with the default will be packed inside a dictionary which is keyword args. Okay. So if I, just to give an example, if I take this variable arg here, I could check that the first arg, so which is this line, and we print only the value of what was in star arg, will be this. So it's a tuple with the name of the value of the variable, the two first variable. And then the other one were keywords, it means that we put the name and the values. And this will be written as a dictionary, where we have the key that corresponds to the name of the variables, and the value that corresponds to the value of variables. So, in some way that could be useful, and you are probably can be comfortable with, but this is useful when, for instance, here I show that I have points, which was x, y, z. But imagine that I want to compute distance in 4 dimensions, or in 5 dimensions, or in 6 dimensions. I could use actually keyword argument, and you pass me the number of points that you want, and then I will loop over the keyword and just compute the distance. So, just to give an example, because we are only 5 minutes. I can show you the solutions. So, I was saying to recompute the distance function using this. So if you check here, what I'm doing is that I'm checking the arguments here, and I'm making the sum of taking each argument in args, okay, compute the differences and the square, like what we speak of. And then I look also on the keywords values, okay? I'm just taking the value of h, I make the same operations, and making every time the sums, and then taking the square root. So like this, what you are going to do is to get any value that you want, so x, y, z, and then after z is a, and you get something like that, and this keeps working, and you can add as much point that you want, okay? So the keyword allows you for this flexibility, but you have to be careful because you need somehow the documentation could be also, if you don't document it, people don't know what you have inside your keyword, so that's something.
Also, another thing is that when you stop using the args, you start using the key args. Meaning, you cannot say something like x equal to 10.5, then say nothing, and then zeta equals to. Once you start putting the keywords, you have to.
Oh, okay. So what? Yeah, you cannot do that.
Exactly.
Okay. Because what comes first is positionals. And they have a position and they mean something. Whatever comes afterward, they have a name and something, and if I put I put it on top. And the one afterwards is linked to nothing. So it's considering as a keyword because it starts from the keyword and not as an arg. So all the arg are the beginning of the functions and the keyword comes afterwards. And the keyword are defined as the name of the variable equal something. Okay? So if you try to run this, it will tell you something. Position argument follows keyword argument. Exactly that. You put an argument after the keywords. Okay. So that's the error that's missing. So yeah, last example and then that's time. We almost mentioned it in some way. Let's see. So I have this code snippet, which is here. And somehow we define A, B, and C. So A will be integer, which is immutable. And then we have two lists where they are mutable. And we'll pass those to a function. And then we stuff will happen to it. So x will be affected to 10 to 3. We will append a new value inside the list and we'll change the list itself to 99. And then we print the value of the result what are inside the function. And then we'll apply the function here and we'll print the initial values and see if they have been modified or not. Okay? And if you run that, we'll obtain that. So it means that if you check the numbers, 23 here, which have been affected here, it didn't change the value of the original value of A. Okay? So we change X inside, but it didn't change A. And then for a mutable one, so for instance this list, where we appended a new value inside, so which is this one. You have to be careful because when you get outside, the original B values have been changed. So when you pass argument to a function that you do something on it, be careful because if you pass a mutable argument, it will be changed. Okay? So that's the takeaway of what's happening in the function. While if you pass an immutable argument, it will not change it. Okay? So if be sure that when you want to pass an argument that you change it is because you really want that you want to change a mutable argument and you need to know what you are doing. Okay? So the big thing is that when it's immutable and that you change inside the functions, it will not change the one that was passed outside. Otherwise, if it's a mutable, it will change it. Okay. Then I think that's about all because I will finish quickly this one, but global variable, never use it, but in case that you need, you can do that. So I think this is here. So for instance, you define x outside, and then set x with y. You can define, when you write global x, you set that actually you will use the x that was defined outside, and you will change this one here. Okay, so then here I make an assignment, and you will see that when I set x, the x that was outside was changed. And if you don't do that in the first case, the x was not changed afterwards. Okay? So, but I'm not sure that you should use global whenever you can. The docstring already saw it, and the function as objects, I already mentioned it when we use it, like for example the docstring that actually you put inside the object itself the documentations. So this the type of thing like the function are objects, that's the first object. Okay. You see that? 500 books if you want, or something like that. But I think that would be one that would be enough. Where you have more stuff. So which will be about reducing codes and how to implement modules and create modules. Input-output is how to read a file and save into a file and those type of things. So it's reading open and those things. It's not really complicated and it wasn't like only speaking about it, so you can read it and it's easy to understand. And then I would have liked to go through that, but okay, anyway. That's the standard library. So Python doesn't come only with form codes and those type of things. We already saw that you have interfaces, for instance, to make complex things. And it comes with a bunch of standard library. When you install Python, you have a module, and it's you have a lot of stuff inside which are useful. So, for instance, you have OS that allow you to manage path. So, for instance, you modify the path of the files, update the path, or you can do that you need to do when you make data scraping or those kind of things. You have stuff that allow you to search some files, so we work or to try to find some specific file with Nodal and those type of things. So if you search for standard library, you would have a bunch of things that are really useful when you have Python, without the need of reinstalling the third party or reinventing the wheel. Usually when you want to run a new feature, you check and it's already implemented. So always check the standard library and what you have inside. Okay. And I think that's all for me.
Well, you can add that actually they can go through the notebooks and if they have any trouble during this week or something, we are around. And otherwise they can open an issue and we'll
probably respond. Yeah, so you can go to the notebook and slide to your sci-fi tutorial page. So yes, you can download it from there and we can then. So whatever you need. Thank you.